Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time, we're going to be tackling a really interesting case, Rumsfeld v. Fair. You know, at first glance, it might just seem like a legal battle, but it's really so much more than that.
Yeah.
We're talking about a clash of values. We're talking about law schools that were opposed to military recruitment policies and the government saying, no, you have to do this, you know, using their power to enforce these policies. So, you know, kind of a classic story.
Yeah.
But it brings up a question. What happens when deeply held beliefs collide with federal funding?
It's a real David and Goliath situation. But it's kind of funny because the military is Goliath in this instance.
That's true. That's true.
So we're talking about the early 2000s. Don't ask, don't tell is in effect. And a lot of law schools are really ethically opposed to this policy.
Yeah.
So they barred military recruiters from their campuses.
So how did the government respond to this protest?
Well, I mean, they kind of hit him where it hurts, you know?
Yeah, the funny thing, they passed the Solomon Amendment, and it basically said, okay, if you want federal funding, you have to give military recruiters the same access as any other employer.
Wow.
So it really put the law schools in a bind. Like, do we compromise our values or risk losing financial support?
That is quite the ultimatum. I imagine it sparked some serious debate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, a group of law schools, they formed this group called the Forum for Academic and Institutional Rights, FARAR for short.
Okay.
And they said, no, we're going to challenge the constitutionality of this.
Mm-hmm.
Their argument was that being forced to host these military recruiters was a violation of their First Amendment rights to free speech and association.
Right.
Essentially, they were saying that the government is compelling them to endorse a message that they strongly disagreed with.
So it wasn't just about allowing recruiters on campus. It was about being forced to almost like endorse this policy that they were so against.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a compelling argument. What did the lower courts think? How did they respond?
Initially, they sided with FAIR. You know, they said, yeah, the Solomon Amendment is kind of going too far here, but this is a big case, you know?
Right.
It wasn't going to just stay quiet. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
And everybody was kind of waiting to see how this battle of principles was going to play out.
Yes, like you said, David and Goliath.
Yeah.
So what happened? What did the Supreme Court decide?
In a surprising turn of events, the Supreme Court actually ruled unanimously in favor of the government and upheld the Solomon Amendment.
Wait, a unanimous decision?
Unanimous.
On a case that had to do with, you know, free speech limitations, that seems almost impossible.
It is pretty surprising. You're right. Yeah, it wasn't a simple case. The court's reasoning was a lot more nuanced than just straight up, you know, restricting free speech.
Okay.
They went into the whole, all the intricacies of the First Amendment, and they made this distinction between compelled speech and conduct.
Okay, let's break that down a little bit.
Yeah.
So the Supreme Court is saying that having these recruiters on campus is considered conduct, not speech.
What does that even mean in this context?
So, you know, think of it this way. A university, they host all sorts of organizations, all sorts of events. Some of them they agree with, some of them maybe they don't.
Right.
But just because they're providing space doesn't mean they're endorsing every single view that's expressed there.
Yeah.
They're just creating this neutral platform.
So it's about their actions. It's not about necessarily endorsing the message. They drew that line between what you do and what you say.
Yeah, exactly.
But Ferrer argued that even if it's considered conduct, allowing the recruiters on campus still sends a message. Like, it's expressive conduct.
Right.
So how did the Supreme Court address that?
Okay. So they basically said, look, this isn't like organizing a protest or choosing what to print in your school newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Those are inherently expressive acts.
Okay.
Hosting recruiters, they said the main function of that is to connect students with jobs, not to endorse the military.
So it's a practical matter, not a symbolic one in their view.
Exactly. But what about Fair's claim that, you know, this infringes on their freedom of association?
Yeah.
That they should have the right to choose which groups they want to have on campus that align with their values.
Right. So the court also talked about the nuances of what's called expressive association.
Okay.
And they basically said the military recruiters aren't members of the law school community. They're visitors with a very specific purpose.
Okay.
And more importantly, FAIR, the members of FAIR are still free to criticize military policies in other ways, right?
Right.
They can protest. They can write op-eds. They can hold debates. They just can't use this one very specific method to completely silence the military's message.
It seems like the court was saying, you can disagree, you can speak out, but you can't use this particular method to shut down another viewpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
But it brings up a big question, a big ethical question, you know? can the government threaten institutions with these funding cuts to coerce them to do certain things?
Right. And it's a very tricky legal and ethical gray area. We're getting into the territory of something called the unconstitutional conditions doctrine. And that is exactly where we'll pick up next time. So there's this unconstitutional conditions doctrine. It's a fascinating area of law. It says the government can't force someone to give up constitutional right just to get a benefit.
Right. Like funding, for example.
Exactly. Exactly. Like funding. So, you know, the government obviously has the power to spend money, right?
Right.
And to set conditions for how that money is used.
Mm.
But the question is, can they use that power to basically step on people's fundamental freedoms?
Yeah, it's a tricky balancing act, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So how did the Supreme Court handle this in ASFA?
Well, they acknowledged that, you know, unconstitutional conditions is a serious question, but ultimately they said that the Solomon Amendment didn't actually cross the line.
Okay.
They pointed to a long history of Congress attaching strings to federal funding, you know, especially when it involves national security.
So they're basically saying national security outweighs the law school's First Amendment concerns in this case.
Well, it's not quite that simple.
Okay.
They said that the government's interest in military recruitment is a compelling one, but they didn't just give them a blank check. They said, you know, the condition for getting the funding has to be directly related to that interest. It can't just be some sneaky way to suppress speech.
That's a really important distinction. So it's not like they can say, we'll fund your school, but only if you agree with every single policy.
Right. Exactly.
There has to be a direct link between the condition and what the government's trying to achieve.
Right. And in FAIR, the court found that link. They said, look, you know, to have a strong military, you need qualified recruits.
Right.
And to get those recruits, you need to give recruiters access to students, including law students.
Makes sense. So the court's basically saying the Solomon Amendment isn't about forcing schools to endorse the military. It's about making sure that there's equal access for recruitment.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But didn't FAIR also argue that just having the recruiters there, even if there's no outright discrimination, creates a hostile environment?
Yeah, that's another layer to this case. They argued that allowing recruiters on campus sends a message to LGBTQ students, you know, that they're not fully welcome or valued. Even if there's no active discrimination, it creates this tension.
Right, like a conflict between, you know, their stated values and their actions.
Exactly.
It sounds like kind of catch-22 for the law schools. Like,
yeah.
If they allow recruiters, they might alienate LGBTQ students and faculty. But if they bar recruiters, then they risk losing that funding.
Yeah, it was a really tough spot for them.
Yeah.
And the court did recognize those concerns about inclusivity, but they didn't think it was enough to outweigh the government's interest in having this military recruitment.
Okay.
They also stressed that the law schools could still speak out against don't ask, don't tell, and advocate for LGBTQ rights, even while they were complying with the Solomon Amendment.
It seems like the court was trying to really walk this tightrope between these two competing interests. So what kind of precedent does FAIR set, you know, for other situations where the government might try to use funding to influence what people do?
That's where things get really interesting. So FAIR doesn't give the government unlimited power to put conditions on funding.
Okay.
But it does create this kind of framework, right? It shows how they can justify those conditions,
mm-hmm.
especially when they can point to something like, you know, national priorities.
So it's not a blank check, but it's a tool that they can use. What would be some examples of how this precedent might play out in other areas?
Well, imagine the government saying, okay, we'll give you federal research grants, but you have to follow these specific ethical guidelines.
Okay.
Maybe they restrict funding for stem cell research or certain types of genetic engineering. Using that same logic from FAIR, they could say, well, this is a legitimate use of our spending power.
Right.
Even if it goes against what the university wants to do with their research.
Or what about Title IX funding?
Yeah.
Could they use that to enforce very specific policies on, you know, sexual harassment or gender equality on college campuses?
Exactly.
It really gets to the heart of this debate.
Right.
About how much autonomy should these institutions have versus how much oversight should the government have?
Yeah. It's about, like, how much freedom do universities and other institutions have to make their own rules, even if those rules clash with what the government wants?
That's a question that really goes beyond just military recruitment or the Solomon Amendment.
Absolutely.
It's about the balance of power in democracy, right? Like, how much power does the government have and how much freedom do individuals and institutions have?
That's a big question.
Yeah. We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive on Rumsfeld vs. Ayer.
We have.
But it feels like we've only just scratched the surface.
I agree.
This case shows how a single legal battle can bring up these really big questions about our society and the principles that guide us.
Mm-hmm. To really understand the nuances of the court's decision, we should look at some of the key quotes, you know,
yeah.
And really examine what they tell us about this fine line between conduct and speech. That's where we'll pick up in part three.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Rumsfeld v. Fair. We've really gone through the background, the arguments, and the Supreme Court's decision, but now I kind of want to zoom in on some of the specific language that the court used.
Oh, okay.
Because I think some of the quotes from the ruling really illustrate how complex this case was.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the most, I think, telling parts of the opinion is where Chief Justice Roberts is addressing this concern that the Solomon Amendment was forcing schools to endorse a message.
Right.
And he writes, "The Solomon Amendment neither limits what law schools may say nor requires them to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Law schools remain free under the statute to express whatever views they may have on the military's congressionally mandated employment policy."
Right.
So they're really emphasizing that this isn't about silencing anyone. It's not about, you know, forcing institutions to, like, just go along with what the government wants.
Right. It's about access, not endorsement.
That's exactly.
Yeah. And the court really drew a clear line between regulating conduct, in this case, requiring schools to give recruiters equal access,
mm-hmm.
versus dictating speech.
Yeah.
They were really clear that if the government had tried to force schools to, like, actively praise the military or promote their policies, that would be a totally different situation.
So the distinction is between, like, facilitating something versus endorsing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because you're providing the space for recruiters to be there doesn't mean that you're saying, "I agree with everything you say."
Right.
It's like if you have a speaker come to your campus.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily saying, "I agree with this person's views." You're just giving them a platform.
Right. You're giving them a platform. And that brings up this balancing act that universities and other institutions always have to do, right?
Right.
They need to give a neutral platform to a lot of different viewpoints.
Okay.
But they also have to uphold their own values and principles.
Yeah. And Fair shows that sometimes those two things can clash, and then it's up to the courts to decide where the line is.
It's definitely tricky. And I think, you know, Fair, maybe it didn't answer all the questions, but it did give us some important guidance on how to think about this, especially when it comes to the government using funding to get institutions to do certain things.
Yeah. And one of the key takeaways from Fair is that, you know, the government can't use funding as a weapon to basically force institutions to give up what they believe in.
Right.
Or to engage in speech that they find really objectionable.
Right. But at the same time, they can use funding to encourage certain behaviors or to promote policies that they see as being good for the country.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like a complete free pass.
Yeah.
But it's not forbidden either.
It's a very gray area.
Yeah.
And the courts are going to have to keep dealing with this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. As these issues come up.
As these issues come up, yeah.
It's interesting because Fair remains so relevant, even though it was decided a while ago. It really makes us think about, you know, the role of government, what the limits of free speech are,
mm-hmm.
that push and pull between what individuals want and what's good for the whole.
Yeah, the individual versus the collective.
As we wrap up this deep dive into Rumsfeld v. Fair, I'm just thinking about how a case that seems like it's just about military recruitment really touches on these much bigger issues that are still with us today.
Yeah, it really highlights how important it is to, you know, stay informed, to be a part of these conversations.
Right.
Because Rumsfeld v. Fair is a reminder that legal cases can bring up questions that affect us all.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it's been interesting and maybe given you some new perspectives on this landmark case.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time. Keep learning and keep exploring these fascinating topics.